Perloff and I have predictions for the upcoming NFL season. But first, Johnny Manziel back in the news. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. You know, Manziel will always have a place, Pearl, in football lore. Literally Johnny Football, one of the great nicknames, what he did at Texas A&M. But obviously his NFL career was extremely forgettable.
Oh my, beyond forgettable. Like he probably wants to forget. It was a disaster. I mean, we talked a lot about the Cleveland Browns quarterback situation this offseason. Imagine all that hype and then just nothing to show for it.
The former CFL quarterback?
Yeah, Johnny Manziel, Manny. So Manziel's doing a little bit of press recently. He was on with Shannon Sharp. He's got his own podcast. He was talking to one of his teammates, former teammates, Braylon Edwards. But let's play a little sound. So first here's Johnny. He's on with Shannon Sharp and Chad Ochocinco saying that he will hate the Cleveland Browns, the Browns that selected him in the first round of the draft. He'll hate them forever.
I sit here today and I go back and forth with, man, am I going to let Cleveland off the hook and just like let it go? Or am I going to sit here with hate and animosity in my heart for the rest of my life? And I finally sit here today and I'm like, but I think I'm going to be pissed at them and hate them forever. So it is what, it, is what it is, man. No love for the Browns. I'm rooting for 0-16 seasons every season.
Ouch. I mean, it's funny. The setup there is amazing. How you think he's had this real big, like, come to Jesus moment, you know, or clarity.
Yeah, of
absolutely
course.
Not. He's going to hold on to the hate in his heart. Why does he hate the Browns so much? Well, he says they didn't do a lot to support him.
Was Cleveland the best situation for me to go to? Did they help me knowing all the things that they knew about me with all the research and everything? Did they put me in the best situation? Absolutely not. It was not the right situation for me. But when it comes down to it, you take all of that aside, you throw it away, and you look in the mirror and you say, I've let an amazing opportunity slip. It's on me. I'm the one that has to sit with myself every single night as I watch college football or watch NFL football and be like, damn, I would be in my 12th year.
It's funny. Johnny taking a little responsibility there, Pearl, and the regret is, I'm sorry, he's expressing remorse. I don't know how much responsibility he's taking. He's basically saying, you knew I was a party animal. You took me anyway and then didn't put anything around me to support me.
Well, oh my God, it's so many parallels with Shedeur Sanders. Nobody, he went 21, right? Like a lot of other teams could have taken Johnny and they didn't take him. The Browns took him and now he's mad at them. Like he would have fallen out of the first round maybe if the Browns didn't take him. So it's funny that I saw the documentary with Johnny Manziel and it struck me that he's not taking more accountability and this seems like an extension of that. It doesn't feel like he's done wrestling with his demons based on that because like that's the first thing. Anybody knows a recovery is the first thing is you take full responsibility for everything. You don't focus on outside people. You don't blame others.
Right. And well, he's definitely not in that phase yet. Here's his former teammate, Braylon Edwards, saying that he hated also playing for the Browns and would leave the city after every Monday practice.
I think I let the losing, the frustration lead to more partying, more drinking, less focus on the football field, more focus on the things that didn't matter because I was trying to escape bad football. I was trying to escape coaches that didn't talk to me. Shoot, as soon as practice is over on Monday, I'm out.
Okay, here's Manziel saying same thing.
I had a flight every Monday.
Same.
Brian Hoyer was the starter, and I was very solidified in the backup role. As I know I'm not prepared, I don't know enough about defenses, he's not coming off the field. I got comfortable in that backup role to where every Monday I was 50-50. It would be straight to South Beach for FDR Mondays at the Delano, or I would go back to Texas and go to Dallas, or go to the Trump Soho.
Jeez, guys.
I sounds mean, like fun.
You name every nightclub the East Coast and Texas. Okay, last one here for Manziel. This is just how messed up he would get right after that Monday practice on his way to the airport to get to any other city besides Cleveland.
I would go to my car every day. I'd have two sticks rolled. I'd try to smoke two blunts in the 6 minutes it takes to get to the airport, and I would be on a flight. I just couldn't wait to get out of Cleveland or be back and breathe Texas air or walk on the beach. On a Tuesday at 6, 7 p.m., I would be on the last flight out, get back to Cleveland at 10 or 11, and then start the week.
I wonder why it didn't work out for him. I'm surprised any air could get into your lungs if you smoke two blunts on the way to the airport.
Are we talking about like little joints, or are we like kind of what you see on the streets nowadays?
Two, it looks blunts, like a cigar. Two blunts in 6 minutes is just, that doesn't make sense to me. No, it doesn't compute up here.
That, I mean, you're taking a blunt is a cigar wrapper, yeah. You know, that you're, well, I don't have to explain that to the audience. You guys know. The weedos and the coffee drinkers in the chat. I'm not gonna mansplain that to everybody. But this is like the crazy part about the Manziel thing, and just like to bring it to the present day. This is why you're right about the Shador Sanders parallels, because nobody trusts the Browns to do right by their own. Now listen, Johnny had tons of problems. The fact that he, I think, is not taking even more responsibility for that, like, this is not the behavior of a potential starting or backup quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. To be jetting off to Miami on a Monday, yeah, because, you know, you need to get your partying in or what have you. Obviously, Manziel's his own worst enemy. But this is how a person turns on their own franchise, right? And even though you're saying, Pearl, why are the Browns getting vilified for drafting Shador Sanders? They're the ones who actually drafted him. They should be being celebrated. It's almost like, but do they do the right things with it? Do they actually have the right intentions of supporting a guy in whatever way he needs to be, yeah, supported? No.
Well, I think with Shador, they're doing an okay job. I mean, Shador is a judge on the fact that he went fifth round. He's a developmental quarterback, and it seems like they're developing him just like you would any other fifth round quarterback. So Shador has been, in my opinion, fine. I know a lot of people debate that. Johnny, like, the team was definitely a mess then, but there's nothing. He's a full-on addict. Like, there's nothing. There's 0% fault on the Browns to me there, because what are you supposed to do? He could have been with the best franchise on planet Earth. You're smoking all that and drinking all that, like, you have no chance, right? He's a garden variety drunk. Mm. To me, it's not, how could that be on the team?
Well, is there ever a thought where when you make an investment into a guy, right? And yeah, everyone knew Johnny was, yeah, partying, right? Like, the public knew, everyone knew he was partying. You still made the investment. Is it a thought to put more resources around him, make sure that he's okay, make sure that he's not jetting off to New York and Miami on the week, you know, after practice on a Monday? I'm not saying someone has to hold his hand, but you're also not a full-fledged, like, pro when you walk into a locker room your rookie year.
Yeah, I hear you, but I think it's very hard to contain an active drug addict. I mean, honestly, and you could throw all the money on earth, and many, many people have, at an addict and an alcoholic. It doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. If that person wants to party, they're going to party.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even if you contain Johnny Manziel, he would have found somewhere else to party, right? Mm. So what difference would it make? No, to me, it's a 100-0 thing. As bad as the Browns were, do you think there's any, if he'd gone to a different situation, that it might have been better, like New England with Tom Brady or something like that?
Well, I mean, to your point, I guess if you're going to find this, you'll find it in Timbuktu. If you really want it, you'll find it. So I don't have a good answer for you there. I guess what I'm not even saying it's like there's like a moral obligation. I'm saying just protecting your business investment.
Yeah, but it's hard with an addict though, isn't it?
So that's the other part about this. Johnny says, like, they did all this research on me and they still took me with a first round pick. Like, what's all this NFL pre-draft process, the scouting process? And
well, because he produced at Texas A&M, like, he could contain his partying, but I think his partying, as it does, got worse.
Mm. You think it escalated that much between his last year at Texas A&M and the first year in Cleveland?
It seemed like he was under some control at Texas A&M. Yeah, I definitely do. And I think it got worse and worse. And then he was in Hamilton with the Tiger Cats.
The Tiger Cats, that's right.
Yes. And he looked skinny. He kind of looked like, oh boy, he's in it. You see pictures of him just get worse and worse physically. No, see, to me, this is Donald Brown. And honestly, if I was giving him advice, I'd say, dude, you clearly hold a resentment against the Browns. You got to get over that. It's not helping you. Browns don't care.
Right.
The Browns have their own new set of resentments they're creating. They moved on to new quarterbacks to cause problems with.
But they've got a whole room full of guys that are going to have future resentments.
I do think, like, there is a thing. If you're drafting a guy like that, first of all, he has to be the right position, and you got to try and milk as much as you can. Like the Patriots with Aaron Hernandez, they knew he was
flawed.
Messed up.
Yeah.
They're like, maybe we could get 5 years out of this.
Mm. But they gave him a contract extension.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how much they knew.
Well. Oh
no, they did. I think Belichick obviously knew Aaron Hernandez.
The guys in the locker room knew he was strange bird.
But they gave him $30 million. Like, who does that?
Yeah, maybe could have. And you know, it's funny too. Lawrence Taylor, totally. You could get certain positions could get away with this a little more. Mm. Quarterback, it seems hard.
Anyway, so Johnny Manziel, it's got a podcast now, so going to be in our lives a little bit as far as media is concerned, and talking about smoking two blunts in 6 minutes on the way to the airport. You know what I fear? I fear this is going to become one of those TikTok challenges, yeah. You know, like when people were eating the Tide Pods and stuff.
Like, cinnamon Tide challenge. Remember the cinnamon challenge? That was also a thing.
What was that?
No, you'd take a spoonful of cinnamon and try to swallow it.
What happened?
You wouldn't be able to. You would cough it right up. And
it's gross.
It's not ideal, no.
Remember the crate challenge?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the crate challenge.
Crazy.
What's that?
That had to be a psyop. So I don't know why, but it seemed like in every hood, they were just putting like a mountain of crates.
Like milk crates. Empty milk crates.
And the goal you had to do was almost like Legos. You'd have to try to walk all the way up the mountain of crates and come down without falling. And most of the time,
every time
went disastrous.
No, people were getting like 10, 12 feet up in the air, though.
I remember that.
No, those crates were like, I don't know where they got all these crates from. Again, this had to be some kind of operation.
The milk store.
I don't know.
To what end, DJ?
Well, I have some conspiracies on the milk crates. You really wouldn't get into it. But,
wow.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot happening in 2020 that people wanted to be, you know, distracted from.
All of a sudden,
crates came out of nowhere, and people were doing this. Like, when did this start?
I'm like, we all spend every waking moment with each other. You got some things about milk crates that I haven't heard yet.
Impossible. God, now you got Maggie. You mentioned the pandemic. Yeah.
The craziest internet challenges. I think this Johnny Manziel one is going to become a thing. Smoking two blunts in 6 minutes. People are going to eat a lot of takeout.
I got to say, I live in Brooklyn. I can walk out on the street any day. Also, weed is so much stronger now.
Yeah.
Like, that is nothing. Well, it's not nothing, but everybody's smoking that anyway. That's called a Tuesday.
6 minutes?
Minutes is wild.
Let me ask you one thing on the cinnamon challenge.
Yeah.
Sure.
Where do we stand on drinking a gallon of milk? Like, there's an urban legend that if you drink a gallon of milk in an hour, your stomach will explode. Have you guys heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that.
I heard that, too.
Especially if you're lactose, yeah.
But it doesn't seem that hard.
You would do it then,
Maggie,
bro.
You've done some crazy food challenges. I feel like you could drink a gallon of milk.
I'm not doing that one.
And I feel like you could swallow a teaspoon of cinnamon.
You're trying to eliminate like half the show.
Crazy challenges. You won't jump off that Grand Canyon.
I got some milk crates at home.
Not engaging in these challenges.
So I was with somebody who drank a gallon of milk once.
Oh, does it make your stomach explode?
It was Kobayashi, the famous
and how'd it go?
Food eater. What's he? A famous
professional eater.
Professional eater. Thank you.
Competitive eater.
There it is.
Even better. He did it. He came to the office and did it.
It doesn't even sound hard.
But that's different.
It's like five glasses of milk.
He's a different animal, though.
No, like, I'm saying,
I think he trains for this.
Yeah. I think you or I or anybody could drink a gallon of milk in an hour.
I strongly disagree. Let's get a doctor.
I don't know. I don't get it.
You're not supposed to be consuming lactose. That's the whole point. Like, that's a thing.
What does it. It's not the lactose. That takes hours to process in your body.
This is why I'm not a scientist.
I'm trying to look up. The internet's not giving me what I want here.
Yeah. What are we supposed to do, NFL awards, Maggie?
Yeah, let's get to it. By the way, AI overview saying drinking a gallon of milk in an hour will likely result in vomiting.
Sounds accurate.
Could have guessed that one.
I would do it, but can I do oat milk?
No.
Why do you always want to water down these challenges?
Because that's a lot of lactose.
Hey, you just poo-pooed my lactose tank.
I know. I could do it in the moment, but 3 hours later, it could be pretty, man.
And call back on the show when we talked about lactose. Jerry Kramer in 1965 had multiple surgeries to remove wooden pieces from his intestines. Your intestines would have to be removed if you drank a gallon of milk in an hour. It would just burn a hole.
I don't get it. It seems easy. I'm going to do it. I haven't committed yet, but this seems like one of the easiest food challenges ever. Go ahead.
Okay, well, how about if you lose to me in our predictions for these NFL awards, then you can do it.
I don't win one of the awards? What do you mean I lose to you?
Like, we can count them up. Like, how many did you win? How many did I win? So here we go. Some NFL season award predictions. Let's save the MVP for last, shall we? So we'll start here, Pearl. Who do you have as your offensive rookie of the year? Who's it going to be?
It's a little fellow in Vegas who's just running over linebackers by the name of Ashton Jeanty. He's my fantasy football running back, and he is my offensive rookie of the year. Didn't always look great in the preseason, but I feel like Pete Carroll, you know what he loves to do. He loves to run the ball. I think that the Raiders are going to be built around the run game. Ashton Jeanty.
Okay, my pick for Offensive Rookie of the Year is actually going to go to the Green Bay Packers, Matthew Golden. I think they're going to be a team that is good enough to be getting a lot of attention. Obviously, now the Micah Parsons trade put them in even more of a stratosphere. They already get a lot of attention. It's the Packers, for goodness sakes. I think they're going to win a lot of games, and I think of that wide receiver room, it's kind of ripe for somebody to really take the reins. Matthew Golden, Offensive Rookie of the Year. What about Defensive Rookie of the Year?
So I went with Mykal Williams on the Niners. I think the Niners' defensive line is going to be very interesting. So you have Robert Saleh back. That's like the biggest addition of the offseason. And then you get Bosa coming in on one side and Williams on the other. Seems like an opportunity for a lot of sacks, kind of like Jared Verse last year with the Rams. I look. It's not actually a great defensive draft. So it was not that easy to pick the right guy. I think he's going to slot in exactly like Jared Verse last year and win Rookie of the Year.
Mine is going to be the obvious pick. It seems obvious to me. Abdul Carter of the New York Giants. That's already a good defensive line, and he's going to add to it. But I think he's going to end up being a standout amongst those really good players. Now, they're not going to win a lot of games, but maybe. I don't think.
I think they'll be okay.
They might be. And yeah. So for that, I think he's going to be in the running for Defensive Rookie of the Year, even if they're not necessarily a playoff team.
Well, my only thought there was they're going to share a lot of sacks. Because of Burns and Thibodeau. And yeah. I think he's not going to stand out over Brian Burns.
Well, I think that they're all going to get a lot of attention. And you know what happens in New York when people get a lot of attention? It gets thrown way out of proportion. Yeah.
I don't even think most people in the country know who plays on the Giants. They don't get it. They're
2 years ago, their coach won Coach of the Year. They got the
Giants to the playoffs. It was the first time in a decade. Yeah, I don't know about that. I feel like that line is great. Just don't you have to be the standout to get the actual sack?
Okay, let's go to, how about Coach of the Year?
Coach of the Year. Okay, this one's tough because I'm not 100% sure. We're doing our picks tomorrow that I'm penciling into the playoffs. But I went with the Patriots, Mike Vrabel. Fits the profile for Coach of the Year. Comes and improves the team. Coach of the Year is rarely like Bill Belichick or the guy who wins the Super Bowl or Andy Reid. It's usually the guy who makes the biggest jump, like a Matt Nagy or a Kevin Stefanski. I feel like Vrabel fits that mold well, and I think people like Mike Vrabel. I think he wins the vote.
Yeah, he's won before, so it'd be a two-time winner. To me, I'm going to go with a throwback, but I think it's going to be Sean Payton. You know, last year there was a little wait and see about Bo Nix and whether or not, Sean Payton was going to be able to turn the Broncos around. Obviously, it didn't end well with Russell Wilson. This is Payton's team. Bo Nix looks great. Defense looks great, which is not exactly his side of the ball, but still, defense looks fantastic. I think they're definitely a playoff team. And if they're challenging the Chiefs for the division crown or maybe even winning it this year, then he's going to get a huge bump. He's super media friendly. Sean Payton already won this award once, but it'd be like it was like a decade ago. Kind of nice story.
Yeah.
Kind of bookend there with Sean Payton, Coach of the Year. Okay.
Yeah. Who won it last year?
It was Kevin O'Connell.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a great. I mean, he could be like Kevin O'Connell, where he takes a medium team and makes him elite. Okay, we had defense player.
Let's do comeback player of the year, and then we'll get into.
Go first on comeback player of the year.
Comeback player of the year to me, I think, is going to go to Aiden Hutchinson. Detroit Lions, I think, are still going to win a lot of games. We know that there was a lot of injuries in the Lions' defense, but Hutchinson felt like one of the biggest losses for them.
They're going to bite a kneecap off.
Have not written the Lions off, and I think Hutchinson coming back and being awesome, probably going to get a big payday as well. Looks like a good candidate to me for comeback player of the year.
Okay, I like it. I'll try Christian McCaffrey, the Niners, because I'm kind of bullish on the Niners. And they say we're going to run everything through McCaffrey, just like we did 2 years ago. They're not afraid of overwearing this guy, despite the injury history. So McCaffrey was nothing last year, fits the profile, could have huge numbers this year.
Okay, let's go to defensive player of the year.
Okay, this is where I took my long shot.
Okay.
How about, and I'm picking Denver Bronco as well, how about Nick Benito, who you might remember had that pick six when the Colts tried the trick play?
Mm.
He is super fast. He had 12 and a half sacks last year. This will probably, not probably, like has a chance to be the best defense in the league in Denver, and he's going to be the guy with the numbers because he'll get to the quarterback the most. Feel like last year they gave it to a cornerback. I think they're going to want to get back to pass rusher, and to me, all the pass rushers are on flawed teams except maybe him. I think he will lead the best defense in the league. He's ninth in odds at 30-1.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I also, for Defensive Player of the Year, went with a pass rusher because they gave it to Patrick Surtain last year, so I was wondering if they would flip back.
I'm glad we thought the same way idea. On that.
Will Anderson is going to be my pick. Everyone's expecting the Houston Texans to have this massive defense and be a sneaky Super Bowl contender. So I'll give my award or my pick will go to Will Anderson. I think he's going to have the numbers. They're going to have a really good team. He won Defensive Rookie of the Year, so he's already kind of in the pipeline, if you will, the award pipeline. And I think they're going to want to reward the Texans, the voters will, and he'll be the obvious choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's got Danielle Hunter on the other side. He might get as many sacks. That's the only – I looked at him, too. That's a good one.
Okay, Offensive Player of the Year before we get to MVP. What do you got?
Okay. I don't know how good this team is, but Ja'Marr Chase is going to be outstanding. I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to challenge or probably surpass 2,000 yards and challenge a single season receiving records. Now, there's an extra game, so I don't know what that all means, but that is going to get a lot of attention. And I feel like Offensive Player of the Year, a lot of times they don't give it to the quarterback who wins MVP. They like receivers. I'll go Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, I thought about Ja'Marr Chase. I'm going to do a weird one here. I'm going to go with Patrick Mahomes. I don't know. He's not my MVP. I've got someone different for MVP, but I think Mahomes is going to have a really good statistical season, and there's going to be this odd anomaly where they want to acknowledge, the voters want to acknowledge that Mahomes had this great year, but they're not going to give him the MVP because I think someone else is going to win it, who we'll tell you about in just a moment. It's almost like how Lamar Jackson got first team all pro, but Josh Allen won the MVP last year. Sometimes these votes weirdly split, and I think that Mahomes is going to be acknowledged just with Offensive Player of the Year, not MVP. It's a little bit odd, but that's what I think is going to happen.
Okay. I like it because we're going to get
that. Yeah, let's go finally. Who's your MVP?
Patrick Mahomes. I think we're thinking the same. I think their offense is geared up to be explosive again. I think he's going to be fantastic. And I don't know if that's a good thing for the Chiefs. I don't know if they want to be in shootouts. Last year, they ground out a lot of wins. I think the offense is going to be better this year. I don't expect them to go 15-2. It was really 15-1, and they gave away week 18. I expect them to be more like 11-12 wins, but Mahomes is going to get back to the 40-touchdown thing. And I think also voters want to reward Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Just kind of like what you just said.
My MVP this year is going to go to Joe Burrow. I think this is the era now we're kind of passing around the MVP. Mahomes has his, Lamar has his, Josh Allen won his last year. Who's the other guy who gets grouped into that mix in this current era of quarterbacks? It's Joe Burrow. Now, until Jordan Love and CJ Stroud and Jaden Daniels all break into that, they still have to break into that super elite tier. So for me, it's going to be Burrow's year. And I also think that the voters, they understand what the defense is, right? So I don't know if the Bengals are actually going to win 13 games or even 12. I think Joe Burrow could win this award with 10 games.
Yeah.
With 10 wins, rather.
With that defense, you're going to need him.
Exactly. And I think that's going to become part of the story with Burrow, is how much he has to overcome this bad defense. And it's actually going to bolster his campaign. So for me, Joe Burrow is going to be your MVP. There you have it.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Which one do you feel most confident about?
Okay. Most confident. I'm going to go with Mahomes because I got to tell you that the Offensive Player of the Year is always dicey. It's usually a non-quarterback. Defensive Player of the Year, a bit of a long shot. Ashton Jeddah is my second most confident. Like, listen, it's not going to be Cam Ward. Isn't it funny that neither of us picked Cam Ward?
I thought you would pick him, so I changed to Matthew Golden.
I mean, well, who was last year? Jaden Daniels? Like, Cam Ward would have to have a winning record to win this award. And I like what the Titans are doing, but I'm not ready to go there. I think he's going to be fantastic. But if they're 5-12, is he going to get Rookie of the Year as the quarterback? Wow, Jaden Daniels. I think Jeddah gets 1,300 yards, boom, wins. Well, how about you?
Mine is Coach of the Year. I think it's Sean Payton's award. That is some of Perloff's and I, our preseason awards picks. We'll put those out on social, and you can weigh in at 888-710-4ISN. All right, coming up, we'll talk to one of our absolute favorites, good friend of the show, Kyle Brandt will join us to preview the NFL season. It's the Maggie and Perloff Show. Welcome back to the Maggie and Perloff Show. NFL season about to kick off. Got to check in with one of our absolute favorites. And if he wasn't busy enough with Good Morning Football, he's added NFL Classics After Further Review, a new show that's airing Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on Vice TV. Love the concept, going back through classic games with the people who participated in them or the fans that watched them. The one and only Kyle Brandt here with us. Got the angry runs, shirt on, Kyle. Love it. Thanks for doing this and congrats on the new show.
It's great to see you, friends. I love that Maggie's got the Bills right behind her. As I just saw, they signed Gabe Davis, and he's coming home. And it's all going to be a big part of what's going on in Buffalo this year. Awesome. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Oh, no, this is awesome. And so first game that you go through, Cowboys, Packers, yeah. How apropos. This is the 1995 NFC Championship game. And obviously the Cowboys went on to win the Super Bowl that year in the third Super Bowl of the dynasty. But Kyle, I mean, the Cowboys are center stage. We thought that this was all one big ruse, one big plot just to keep our attention. But it turns out Jerry was serious, traded Micah Parsons to Green Bay. Do you think Jerry's going to regret this move? Yes or no?
No, because you just asked me the question about it on your show. And so that's a touchdown. That's it. This is a great time for Dallas and Jerry. They make a lot of money. Their evaluation is really high. Hit documentary, hit cheerleader show. The football, whatever. I've said this a bunch of times. They used to be a football company that made content on the side. They're a content company that makes football on the side. And business is booming right now. I don't think he'll regret it at all.
Kyle, you know, now that Micah Parsons might have serious back injury, is there any chance that the Packers actually lost this trade? Your dreaded Packers as a Bears fan lost the trade to Jerry Jones and the Cowboys because Micah won't be able to hold up physically?
I mean, is there some kind of lemon law thing that kicks in? This seems so weird, right? Like they do the trade and everyone hoots and hollers and screams and they're like, oh, wait, he has a problem with his vertebrae. What? Doesn't he have to pass all kind of checks and balances and inspections and physicals? I think he did. I think he's going to be all right. But believe me, Perloff, when this trade happened, every Bears text chain that I'm on started losing their minds. Well, there goes the season. So I know a lot of Bears fans who are actually rooting for his back to be jacked up. The Packers are so well run. I have to believe they wouldn't trade for this if they had any concerns about his back. But it's a weird headline when you start hearing about epidurals before the season.
Yeah, as I like to say, Kyle, the epidurals, they work. But you don't want to necessarily be on the receiving end of it. Take my word. Kyle Brandt's joining us. The new show is called NFL Classics After Further Review. Wednesdays, 9 p.m. on Vice TV, going back through classic games with the people who played in them and fans who lived it, which is just awesome. Another question for you on the Green Bay side of things. After the Micah Parsons trade, are they now the biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC, in your opinion?
No, they are not. The Packers are much, much better than they were a week ago. You know who's the biggest threat to the Eagles? This may be a weird answer, but it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not only are they good and not only do they have a lot of the ingredients, Eagles fans know, Maggie, the Bucs messed the Eagles up. For some reason, when they play Tampa, Philadelphia does not come off well. Look last year. They shut down Saquon last year. Tampa did. They knocked them out of the playoffs 2 years ago. I think the Buccaneers are going to have a shot this year, like a real shot, because they're one of the only teams that has proven they can handle that whole Nick Sirianni Eagles experience. I like Tampa. Everybody kind of likes Baker. I like Tampa, especially when they go against Philly.
Kyle, I'm really excited for the new show, but if you're going to do the 0-2 NFC title game where the Bucs beat the Eagles, then I'm not watching. That is, I mean, you understand, like, half your audience.
Talk about it.
Half your audience can be tortured by most of these games. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, it's really fun, actually, because there's usually, like, you know, they're really close games, right? It's not like the Manning cast. Most of the times they do Manning cast, it's live. The game's terrible. There's nothing they can do about that. For this show, it's like the Manning cast, but the games are all awesome, which means they come down to the line. You know what's funny, though, Andrew, is that, like, sometimes we watch these games back, and we know how it ends, but we still get scared it's going to end differently. Like, I was watching Titans-Rams, the 99 Super Bowl with the greatest show on turf. I still think Kevin Dice is going to catch that ball from Steve McNair and score. I still can't believe they tackle him. And you watch the play. I was watching with Kurt Warner and Cedric the Entertainer, who's from St. Louis and loves the Rams. They were nervous on the Titans' final drive. Like, they're going to do it. We're going to lose. You really do feel that way. And that's part of what's fun about the show. So, yeah.
We're talking with Kyle Brandt, of course, one of the hosts of Good Morning Football, but also now a new show, NFL Classics After Further Review, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. on Vice TV. And you are a lifelong Bears fan. And I'm curious to take the temperature of the Bears fans right now, not the Micah Parsons trade, leave that to the side. How many people would you say the percentage of the fan base is on board, and how many are skeptical that the Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson tandem is going to work?
80-20 on board, big time on board. If you're a fan of a team and you have been your whole life and you're not excited right now, like, what are you doing? What kind of self-loathing prison are you in? This is an exciting time. The Bears went and got the cool coach. They don't usually do that. They don't really ever do that. I remember Mark Trestman. I remember All of these people that they have brought through here, like, that's the coach of the beloved Chicago Bears. Maggie, there's two moments when I fell in love with Ben Johnson as Chicago Bears head coach. One, his opening press conference in which he completely called out Matt LaFleur, despite, like, not having any relationship with him. They're not from the same coaching tree. It's not like two buddies who used to be assistants together. Just completely gratuitous, went outside his lane to call out LaFleur, which was awesome. And the second part was after one of Caleb's first practice under Ben Johnson. There was a clip of him during practice when Ben Johnson was screaming at Caleb, like really, really getting, he was late on his show. He can't do that. We can't have that in this offense. He was late. It's not acceptable. And I was like, exactly right. Yell at that NIL kid who's been had his butt kissed for his entire life. Yell at him. Put him in his place. Every coach that's ever had Caleb, just this halo around him. He's so talented. He's so talented. Ben Johnson's like, I don't give a crap. He was late. You don't be late in my offense. That's when I knew I loved him.
Your Aaron Rodgers interview this summer, I know you've probably done multiple Aaron Rodgers interviews, got a lot of press. I'm kind of curious, before the interview and after the interview, like, what's your sense of where Aaron is right now? Sometimes he seems almost too relaxed, as if he's not that he's not into it, but he feels like whatever was going on with the Jets, he feels like he's past that to me. What's your vibe with Aaron Rodgers?
It's a good question. It's my favorite person to interview in the entire industry by far. The second place is not even close. Honestly, I think part of it is because he's much closer to me in age than most of these guys, but also because the stakes are always high and he's so unapologetic. He doesn't care. He doesn't say one game at a time. He doesn't say we have to execute. He just talks real. And the Jets thing, I think, ended horribly, horribly. Like, let's be honest, guys, after he left the Packers and chose the Jets, you would give that time with the Jets, like, I don't know, if not an F, a D minus. He gets injured. The second season amounts to nothing. The coach gets fired. The GM gets fired. It was a disaster. It makes it much more pressure packed now that he's going to go to the Steelers. And like, if you're Rodgers, arguably the greatest to ever play the position, you can't end with two duds. You can't like limp off with like two misses, especially now that you're with a team that always wins and you couldn't win with them. I think he is very excited to be with the Steelers. And I did my playoff picks this morning. I think the Steelers are going to be in the playoffs. I have them as an AFC wild card, as I do every single year. Will they do anything when they get there? I don't know. But I think the Rodgers Steelers will be in the playoffs.
NFL Classics, after further review, Wednesdays, 9 p.m., Vice TV kicks off with the 1995 NFC Championship game, Cowboys-Packers. The host of Good Morning Football, Kyle Brandt. Kyle, thanks so much for joining us, and have fun this NFL season. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you, Ball. Thank you very much for having me.
Let's get to Andrew Bogus, who's got the latest and greatest for us. What's up, Bogus?
Guys, it has become the theme of today's show, pitchers versus catchers. Who survives? And it all began with Houston lefty Framber Valdez putting a fastball into the chest of catcher Cesar Salazar, who was expecting something off speed. No flinch, no surprise, no apology from Valdez. He just turned around and wanted to move on to the next pitch. Now, a lot of people think Valdez might have done this on purpose out of frustration. This happened two pitches after an unnamed and unimportant Yankee hit a grand slam.
Trent Grisham.
Valdez says it was just a cross-up. Salazar basically agrees.
Good amount of Yankees fans, so it was pretty loud for the grand slam. Maybe my pitch gun wasn't in the right spot, so I pressed the wrong button, you know?
Or maybe he hates me. The Astros lost the game 7-1, but the Mariners lost again in Tampa 6-5, so Houston stays three games clear atop the AL West. Forgive me for my tardiness on this one. It's new to me, but it is from the weekend. A's hosting the Rangers. The A's broadcast showing a man and a woman eating ice cream sandwiches in their seats. The ice cream brand is It's It, which leads to this exchange between this Dallas Braden and Chris Carey.
I go for one of them, too. Little It's It.
What's that? It's It.
What's an It's It?
Yeah.
For the folks at home, I, on behalf of Chris Carey, I will apologize. You are a handful, Chris, let me tell you.
Okay, so
this is amazing. I showed it to my husband when it came across my timeline. I was laughing at it so much.
So that noise is when the camera still on this couple and the guy just reaches over and takes a big handful of the lady's bosom. The camera shoots north. And then that's why Dallas Braden calls Chris Carey a handful when he can control
yes,
himself.
Yes, and it, obviously they're clearly together. The woman's laughing about it, so yes. It wasn't a weird, like, groping situation, but he definitely groped his wife or something.
A lot of Red Sox fans just heard that one clip of the 3-1 to Varitek.
There was a video as well. Same thing. They had a couple of fans out in center field, and just a foursome of fans, and then just one just went on over and grabbed another person, and there was a lot of silence.
All that to say, when the broadcast has to go quiet for 30 seconds because the guys are chuckling so much, then you know something happened. And the cameraman disappears.
You get a sky shot. There's the roof. Here's the roof of Daikin Park, guys.
Novak Djokovic, a four-set win last night over Taylor Fritz at the U.S. Open. He gets Carlos Alcaraz in the semifinals. And very quickly, something that might lead tomorrow's show, our buddy Pablo Torre's latest bombshell on his podcast is that Kawhi Leonard apparently got $28 million for doing nothing from a fraudulent tree planting company funded by Clippers owner Steve Ballmer. The issue would be if the Clippers circumvented the salary cap by giving Kawhi this extra cash for nothing through this company. But there are at least some people coming to the Clippers' defense here. Not that it's not shady, just trusting that Steve Ballmer knows how to cover his tracks here well enough to avoid punishment. And I guess he did this with his son's Seattle area high school team. Was basically
give
paying,
him a no-show job,
or just was finding a way to fund the team. Maybe $100 handshakes. That's a well-known secret around the Seattle area about 10 years ago. So people are not surprised that he might have been playing fast and loose with the rules.
I'm just curious how Pablo Torre lands on these topics. Was this, they all say around like, hey, you know what? Let's look at Kawhi Leonard's financial situation. Like that would be, what, 400 millionth on the list of topics? That's why.
I think it's like he's the one place where you could, that's like doing journalism.
So like people call.
All of the tips.
But it's just like rando in name weird stuff.
You want to know what? Pablo is weirdly set up in this realm because he went to Harvard. So I think
I didn't know that.
I think he's got a lot of smart people in high places who might be in his orbit. Two, he does sports, but he also does politics. He's on MSNBC all the time as a contributor. So he's got like two worlds of people who are constantly digging into stuff. And, you know, this company filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, there's a lot of paperwork that doesn't look good for the Clippers in this report.
So is the thought, okay, I have a lot of questions. Is the thought that Steve Ballmer needed to do this for some kind of like, circumvent the salary cap, but like some kind of tax shield?
No, I think this is what it took to get Kawhi Leonard to be a Clipper, was to give him $30 million extra dollars on the sly. I think that's the thought.
He doesn't even play.
They thought he was going to play.
Oh, man. I wasn't sure if this was some kind of shell company like Steve Ballmer needs to hide more taxes from, like, he doesn't get enough breaks.
No, I think this is just about, this is how he lured Kawhi to the Clippers.
There's been so much smoke about all of the underhanded things the Clippers did to try to get Kawhi.
Remember, they still don't win.
I know, but the trainer sued them. Someone sued Jerry West, RIP, for doing stuff to maybe get Kawhi to the Clippers. I don't know what it is about that relationship and how much they value this guy.
I guarantee he has not sold one seat in that arena. Who is buying season tickets off of Kawhi Leonard? He doesn't play. Okay, I'm going to stop.
I'm going to save it for tomorrow.
By the way, when Kawhi was on the court, that guy's so good. Even this year, EJ was talking about the Clippers. Weren't you thinking about the Clippers for a minute?
Yeah, well, I still kind of am.
Because Kawhi's out there.
Yeah, but when is he going to play?
He played a little bit last year, right?
Playoffs, he was great, yeah.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Still lost. Yeah. Harden, thanks at Game 7, Harden.
Yeah, I mean.
Shocker.
To counter the James Harden. It's Kawhi Leonard, I'm a big fan. Winning player. That's my kind of guy. I would pay him off the books any day of the week.
Suitcases full of cash. 888-710-4ISN. Bogues, thank you very much. Coming up, very excited to tell you about something that's coming our way next. We'll tell you in moments. Don't move. Maggie and Perloff. All right, Maggie Perloff show got an announcement about something that we're doing tomorrow, which we're excited about. First, though, I want to go to Frank in Georgia, who's been hanging on to talk about a topic that kind of took over the show today, which is who's the toughest person on a baseball diamond? Is it actually the pitcher or the catcher? It's kind of like, who would you not want to get into a fight with? Is the genesis of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Pearl, you think the catchers are the toughest guys. I said pitchers are the most psychotic.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to get in a fight with a pitcher. You would not want to get in a fight with a catcher.
I put MLB catchers against any position in any sport. I think those guys are monsters.
Frank, what do you think about this?
Good morning. You know, I guess my better wishes, I'm going to side with Perloff on this one. I'm leaning towards catchers, but with a caveat, no one mentioned I would not want to go against John Kruk. That is the guy that right. I would not want to run into at midnight in an alley behind a bar.
Yeah, but John Kruk could have been a catcher, basically, his mentality. He's closer to a catcher. But by the way, if you kick him in the man region, then you might not land where you think you're landing.
Just run.
Does nobody get that joke? Jesus. You guys all know John Kruk has one.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Okay. It just wasn't funny. Okay.
You'd have to be Pele for some your aim for that. But Frank, thank you for the phone call. Siding with Perloff. Hey, listen, it happens every now and then. No, just kidding. I think it's funny about you and I, the definition of who you wouldn't want to get in a fight with. Yes, I know that catchers are very tough, but to me, the psycho nature of the pitcher, the unpredictability of Chris Sale or a Nolan Ryan, someone like that, is just, that's what I don't want to go up against.
I'm going on body type. Like, I would always take short. The short, stout guy is always the toughest guy.
Also, catcher is the toughest position in all of sports. I mean, I know you take some fastballs and some inopportune places, but you're telling me that's a tougher position than defensive tackle?
Yes, because not only that, the bat comes right by your head. Like, you have to just, like, that is a very tough position. It's famously a tough position. Like, tough guys and strong, you know. You mentioned Yogi Berra. Yogi Berra was, like, a human fire hydrant. He was all muscle. He was just, like, they're all, like, blocks. I'm looking at all these pictures of catchers. Like, JT Realmuto, Bogues mentioned Will Smith. That guy's built like a tank.
Okay, but they also, the best catchers, you're squatting back there for like 130 games. Football is so tough, you can only play 16, 17, 18 games or else your brain is mush.
Well, you know who I take in football? The center. Jason Kelce on that tush push. Low man wins. I think that's the toughest guy.
And by the way, how lame are the Philadelphia Eagles that they sold the rights to Tush Push?
Oh,
to
you don't like
wipes.
That? That was just...
it's so gross. Okay, quickly, if we don't get to it now, we're never going to get to it. So let's do it. Tomorrow, we are starting something really fun that's going to go throughout the NFL season. It's going to happen on Thursdays. And I love it. And it's something we're calling Perloff King of the Mountain. And what it is... it's the Maggie and Perloff search for the greatest NFL team of all time. And how we're going to do this, dynamite, how we're going to do this is we have selected the 25 greatest NFL teams ever. Ever. This is not a recency bias. We're not doing last 25 years. No cop-outs. Greatest 25 football teams ever in the history of the NFL. And EJ has created, or maybe... just borrowed, a randomizer who's going to randomly put together the first matchup.
Well, it's not a who, it's an it.
It. Whatever.
We don't have some random guy coming in and being like...
the Don King of randomizers.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever heard of artificial intelligence, Maggie? We can randomize 25 teams.
So whoever wins in that head-to-head matchup, which, by the way, you are going to vote on. So it's going to be you voting at Maggie and Pearl on X to determine who moves on. So which team wins head-to-head as the greatest team of all time, and then they move on to week 2, week 3, week 4, week 5, and we go all the way to the Super Bowl. Did I miss anything?
No. We're ready to do a spin here.
Are we going to tell who our first two are today?
I think we're supposed to, yeah.
Oh, so I love it.
Yeah,
go.
So we can get this ready to go. Okay, so we got one spin here. I'm going to also record this for social here. So the wheel is spinning. Ooh, it's spinning. This is really cool. All right.
Take
so
our
the first
word for
team,
it.
We have the... 1998 Vikings, a team that did not win the Super Bowl. So that's going to be a first team against. We're going to do this last spin here. We're going to have here the, this is going to be a tough one. It is a tough one. 72 Dolphins.
Right out of the gate, the 72 Dolphins.
So interesting matchup there. You got the 72 Dolphins versus a team that did not win the Super Bowl.
Overrated Dolphins.
The King of the Mountain starts tomorrow. The search for the greatest NFL team of all time. Tomorrow we kick it off with the 98 Vikings versus the 72 Dolphins. What did we get ourselves into with the randomizer? Thank you, EJ Stewart, Mandy Rodriguez, Andrew Bogus, Andrew Kaplan, Widows, Coffee Drinkers.